Radio Prague News.
President Zeman has said he will seek 5 million crowns in damages and an apology from a Brno politician over a cancer claim. No more than 9 candidates of 20 who registered will run in the presidential election, the Interior Ministry has confirmed. And archaeologists say they have found mass graves from the height of the Middle Ages in the Czech Republic, which could be unique in Europe. Czech President Miloš Zeman has said he is seeking damages of 5 million crowns and an apology from the Brno politician who suggested that the head of state is suffering from cancer. Mr. Zeman said that the damages his office will seek from Svatopluk Barki could flow into his electoral fund or could be contributed to charity. He added that the 5 million crown figure was inspired by the damages sought in the past by former President Václav Havel. Barkík wrote on his Facebook page at the start of the week that Zeman, who is seeking re-election as president at the start of 2018, was suffering from cancer and claimed that he had only months to live. Mr. Zeman's doctors have also denied the claim he is suffering from cancer. No more than 9 candidates of 20 who registered to run in the presidential election this week will be eligible, the Interior Ministry's Klára Pěkynicová confirmed Friday. According to the official, 11 candidates did not fulfill the necessary legal requirements, either failing to submit enough signatures from the public or from lawmakers, or they filed after the Tuesday deadline. A total of 8 would-be candidates submitted no signatures at all. Those running in the election on January the 13th range between the ages of 41 and 74. Archaeologists say they have found mass graves from the height of the Middle Ages in the Czech Republic, which are probably unique in Europe. The around 30 mass graves containing 1,500 human remains, mostly from the 14th and 15th century, have been discovered at the historic town of Kutná Hora. Many of those who were buried hurriedly died from the plague or from famine. In some graves, the bodies are 5 layers thick. In the largest grave, 27 layers thick. Archaeologists believe the wide cross-section of the population buried can give a good picture of living conditions and how those evolved over time. In other news, Andrej Babiš, tasked with forming a new government after his party ANO won a decisive victory in the election in October, is looking to tax church restitution payments, the Daily Lidové Noviny writes. The funds until now were exempt in a deal agreed between a previous government and religious organizations to offset damages caused by the communist regime when it unlawfully seized church property in Czechoslovakia after 1948. Over a period of 30 years, the state is to pay some 59 billion crowns, adjusted for inflation, for property which could no longer be returned. Not only Mr. Babiš is in favor of taxation, according to the Daily, but also the Communist Party, which cited the taxation of funds as crucial for its support of an ANO-led minority government. Together with the Freedom and Direct Democracy Party, led by businessman-turned-politician Tomia Okamura, who has also backed the idea, the three could pass changes quite easily in a new lower house. A hepatitis A epidemic has continued to spread in the region of Uski, with 30 new cases registered. The epidemic led towns in the region to take special hygienic measures, for example, at the election recently, where in voting booths, disinfectant gels were offered. In all, 237 people in the region have contracted the disease since August. I'm Jan Vellinger. That's all the news for now.
Hello, this is Radio Prague with me, Ian Willoughby. Today, CEZ is producing more nuclear power, but will the power giant be split in two in a bid to fund more reactors? Scientists issue a warning as the number of old trees declines in the Moravian Amazon. And we meet the top UK violinist Tamsin Whaley-Cohen ahead of her first performance with the Czech Philharmonic Orchestra on Saturday. All that's coming up in today's programme. Czech Republic's dominant electricity producer and long-time state cash cow, CEZ, is seeing boosted production from its nuclear power plants after coming through a rough patch. And intense interest is focused now on a possible split of the company in a bid to fund more nuclear reactors. Chris Johnstone reports.
CEZ boasted this week a surge in power production from its Dukovany and Temelin nuclear power plants after coming through a rough patch in the last 2 years, with prolonged unscheduled outages due to flawed checks in the past. Many of those have been caused by inadequate X-ray checks on pipes at both power plants carried out by a subcontractor, with the energy giant having to scramble to carry out new examinations and review its past moves to hive off work to outside companies. And bosses were upbeat that those problems are behind it, and new licences needed for operating the last two reactors at its oldest plant, Dukovany, will be granted by the nuclear watchdog by the end of this year. Already this year, CEZ says output from its nuclear plants has climbed by 9% compared with 2016 to hit 20.4 terawatt hours. The nuclear plants have helped cover a 6% drop in electricity produced from coal-fired plants. And CEZ's Martin Novak added that the improved performance should continue to the end of the year and beyond.
We plan to significantly increase nuclear output by 18% to 28.4 terawatt hours. In the future, we'll be aiming above 30, which is technological maximum of our power plants.
But a lot of interest in the Czech Republic and outside is focused on CEZ's future moves over nuclear power, more specifically whether and how it might push ahead with the construction of at least two new nuclear reactors to fulfil the country's long-term energy plans. In particular, the government, the dominant near 70% shareholder in CEZ, put out in June three scenarios for building the new nuclear plants. These include the idea that the state could take over the plans and push ahead on its own. Another option is that CEZ pushes ahead with some sort of government guarantees, perhaps on the price of nuclear-produced power, to help cover the massive costs of such a venture. And the last, and perhaps most controversial, is that CEZ is split, with some parts, perhaps its renewables and distribution assets, sold off, and the state increasing its shareholding in the nuclear and coal power production activities so it can proceed with nuclear expansion without worries about protests from minority shareholders. CEZ bosses are grappling with the question of how such a split in the company could go ahead, bringing in outside consultants to help it clarify its position, and looking at how this proceeded with big energy companies in neighbouring Germany. But the clock is ticking for conclusions to be reached by CEZ and the government on the three options, with an initial target set for decisions on the three options to be taken by March 2018. But with no Czech government still in sight after recent elections, some slippage in that deadline can be expected, and the prospect of at least one new reactor ready by 2035 could begin to look unlikely.
That report was by Chris Johnstone. The Moravian Amazon, an area along the lower parts of the Morava and Dia rivers in the southern part of the Czech Republic, is considered one of the richest habitats in Central Europe. However, scientists are ringing the alarm bells. They warn that the number of old trees in the UNESCO biosphere area, which provide a home to rare species of beetles, are being crowded out and their numbers are rapidly declining. Ruth Frankova has more.
The open woodlands along the lower Morava and Dia rivers in the southern tip of the country has been extremely rich in old oaks, elms and other trees, providing a valuable refuge of biodiversity. But according to a recent study by a team of Czech biologists published in a prestigious magazine Diversity and Distributions, the magnitude of the open woodland loss equals that of the most endangered tropical habitats. To map the extent of open woodland loss, scientists compared two sets of aerial photos of the region from 1938 and 2009. In 1938, about half of the area was covered by an open forest, which looked a bit like savanna. Now it is only about 5%, and the rest is covered mainly by dark, closed canopy forest. Lukáš Čížek is one of the members on the research team.
We found that basically the large trees and the endangered beetles associated with them are today found mainly in the places that are still open. This is not exactly new finding, but we also found that within the closed forest, these old trees and these rare beetles are found in the places that were open these 70 years ago in 1930s, while in the places that were already closed in 1930s, the incidence of these important trees and beetles was much lower.
Scientists also discovered that the mortality of trees is much higher in the closed canopy forest than in the open conditions. The old trees growing up in open forest usually climb to 20 or 25 meters. In the closed canopy forests, they are usually overgrown and eventually killed by younger, taller and more vigorous species. According to Lukasz Cizek, changing the situation would require a partial cutting of the forest to make space around the old trees, as well as changes in the forest management.
The Moravian Amazon is biologically richest forest in Czech Republic and probably in Central Europe. It's a UNESCO biosphere reserve. It's protected under Natura 2000. The problem is that none of these titles has any effect on the spot. The forests are owned by the state and managed by state forest enterprise, and they are being extremely rapidly logged off, so the age of the forest is decreasing. Currently, only about 2% of the area is covered by nature reserves, so it's necessary to declare much more of the area as a protected area that really allow nature conservation decisions on the spot.
Another step to prevent the overgrowing of open woodlands is the introduction of large herbivores such as cattle and bison, which used to graze there in the past.
That report was by Ruth Frankova. And now Ruth speaks to the top UK musician Tamsin Whaley-Cohen. That's ahead of her debut appearance with the Czech Philharmonic.
The renowned British violinist Tamsin Whaley-Cohen is set to make her debut with the Czech Philharmonic in Prague's Rudolfinum on Saturday. The graduate of the Royal College of Music and last year's recipient of the Echo Rising Star Awards will be performing a world premiere of a piece by the award-winning British composer Richard Blackford. I caught up with Tamsin Whaley-Cohen between the rehearsals and I first asked her to tell me more about the programme. You are making your debut performance with the Czech Philharmonic on Saturday. So what exactly will be on the programme?
We will be premiering Richard Blackford's new concerto, which is called Niobe. And it tells the story of the myth of Niobe. And the violin plays the part of Niobe. So it's a very tragic, very dramatic story. And other instruments in the orchestra take on other roles in the storytelling. And it's incredibly exciting to be here to play with this wonderful orchestra and beautiful hall and to present this music to the world for the first time. It's a great honour.
So how does the world premiere of Niobe come to be in Prague?
Well, in fact, the Czech Philharmonic have commissioned this, so that's why it's here. It's their commission. It's very much a Czech Philharmonic project, so it's really wonderful to be a part of that.
And is it true that Richard Blackford wrote the violin part especially for you?
Yes, that is true. That is true. I've known Richard actually for a long time, although this is the first time we've worked together on his music. But a few years ago, he said that he had this idea for a violin concerto, and he brought it to the Czech Philharmonic, who immediately said that they would like to be part of it, and in fact, that they wanted to commission it. And we discussed a lot about Niobe and its relevance today also. She was extremely harshly punished for her enjoyment and perhaps a bit of boastfulness about her children, her family. And I think this is something that women still experience, very unfair censorship and unfair punishment for stepping outside restrictive boundaries in different ways all over the world. So it's not only a story about hubris, I think it's very much a modern story that we can learn a lot from and try not to repeat the treatment of people.
So apart from the Czech Philharmonic, it's going to be an all-British performance with a British conductor at the helm.
That's right. It's a British team apart from the Czech Phil and apart from Mozart and Schubert. I'm very much looking forward to being able to hear the Schubert in the second half.
So what is it like playing with the Czech Philharmonic? I imagine it's not always easy to get in sync with a new orchestra and you probably didn't have much time for joint rehearsals.
Yes, well, we've just had the first rehearsal just now and we have another rehearsal tomorrow and then the dress rehearsal. Actually, I feel, you know, very, very welcomed, which is really lovely because it's not always the case, of course, with orchestras. And I feel we're really working on this concerto together. And the violin is not the protagonist opposing the orchestra as so often in the big romantic concertos. It's more part of the storytelling. So it's very much teamwork that we need to do for this concerto, and at the moment I'm hugely enjoying working with them.
You are playing a very special violin, a Stradivarius. I believe there are only about 500 of these violins around the world, so yeah. How did you happen to be one of the lucky people to play this special instrument?
This instrument is on loan to me, and the man that played it before was Laurent Fenyevich, Hungarian violinist and teacher. I was lucky enough to know him and have lessons with him at the end of his life at Pressure Cove, a wonderful chamber music place of study and inspiration, which was founded by Chandor Vague, now run by Stephen Isles. And his family had the wish that somebody that knew him would play his violin, so I'm incredibly lucky to have this wonderful instrument. It's a complex instrument full of dark colours and complexities, but I think as an artist that's what we're always looking for, more ways of expressing, more emotions, more storytelling, more narrative. So the more it can offer me, I'm always looking for that.
Is it also more sensitive, would you say, in comparison to other violins?
Certainly, I think that's the case for a lot of the great violins, particularly from that period. Of course, it's nearly 300 years old, but also I do think the violins with greater complexity, which give the person that's playing them more artistic options, sometimes the price you pay for that is that they are more temperamental. Of course, they're just made of wood, so they are affected by their environment, but that's a price I'm happy to pay for what it gives back to me.
In November, you are also releasing a new CD titled
Yes.
Bohemia,
yeah.
Which features the works of Dvořák, Janáček and Suk.
That's right.
Is Czech music close to your heart, would you say?
Yes, actually very close to my heart. I always absolutely loved Dvořák from when I was quite a small child and grew up, in fact, playing Dvořák quartets. And the Janáček, I first really, again, got into Janáček's music through his quartets, and I absolutely adore the sonata. The rawness of emotion, the absolute honesty. It's in a couple of bars, he can break your heart and open up a whole world to the listener and to the musician. And in fact, I'm also currently working on a Dvořák cycle with my string quartet of the complete Dvořák quartets. So we're playing five of them this season. It's music that I absolutely adore. It gives me energy. It feels so full of life, full of the joy of living and the visceral experience that we all have.
So how did this CD, Bohemia, how did it come about?
It actually, in a way, sits at the beginning of a series of CDs I've done over the last few years, which between them tell a sort of story of the 20th century. So the one that would come after it would be the 1917 CD. So the Janáček is the latest work on this disc, written in 1914, right before the outbreak of the First World War. And the idea of the disc is this incredibly cultured world of Central Europe, which was completely lost, of course, after the First World War. And that's the idea behind the disc, is to give a musical window into that world.
And out of these three composers, which of them proved to be the biggest challenge for you?
It's a very difficult question. I find everything challenging to try and do it really well and really get to the heart of the music. I think it's always a big ask for a musician, and they demand very different things. The Dvořák is quite optimistic and open. It's quite an early work. The Suk, actually incredibly melancholy, quite heartbreaking pieces, quite strange in a way, unexpected harmonies in the piano, quite menacing. So to really enter into that mindset of this sense of threat in the background. And the Janáček is, you just have to throw your heart into it so much, you have to open yourself completely. And that is always, you know, a great challenge, and it demands more and more of the person that's playing it.
So as we said, you have a premiere, world premiere of the piece by Richard Blackford on Saturday, and then you're actually coming back to Prague to record this concerto. Is that right?
That's correct. So on Monday, we'll be recording the concerto for release on Signum Classics, which is very exciting. I can't wait for other people to be able to hear it. It's a wonderful way to put the work out into the world so that many people have the option to be able to experience it.
Tamsin Whaley-Cohen, who was speaking there to my colleague, Ruth Frankova. That's all for now, folks. From me, Ian Willoughby, thank you very much indeed for listening to Radio Prague, and goodbye.